fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
Wow. Boy, the president's really struggling, isn't he? There's no support out there for him. There's no passion for him. Meanwhile, they're having a hard time. You know, if you're Beto, woo, you're looking at your crowd of like 20 people going, I think we're in trouble here. Do the Democrats have the kind of passion that we saw last night from President Trump? And I will show you how passionate it was in a way that I have not seen yet, and mainly because I think Google is making it impossible for you to see it. I'll explain in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, I want to talk to you a little bit about Relief Factor. If you're in constant pain, you're not alone. Yesterday, we were digging post holes and using railroad ties, and I worked until about 5 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday, which there's no way 2 years ago I could have done that. So much pain. Relief Factor allows me to do the things that I want to do the things that I used to be able to do, but then my pain got so bad that I just couldn't do it anymore. Get your life back. Just try it. If you've been listening to me talk to you about this for a while, please just try it. It'll cost you $20. If it doesn't work, yes, you're out $20. If it does, you get your life back. That's the way I felt. 800-500-8384. Click relieffactor.com. Just go to relieffactor.com. Get their 3-week quick start. Try it. 70% of the people who do see a huge difference. I know I did. Relieffactor.com. All righty. So last night, I saw Donald Trump's rally, and I just saw the pictures of Donald Trump's rally, and I thought, wow. Now I want to take you through, and I'm going to describe these. But if you're a subscriber to the Blaze, this is the time you're going to really appreciate your subscription, because I want you to see these pictures. But I'll describe them if you're just listening to us on radio. Here is a picture that I had no problem finding at all, no problem finding, from 2008. This is Barack Obama during his election. Okay, we all remember this. I think this one is up in, I think this is Wisconsin. I could be wrong. I think this is Madison.
A lot of people there. I mean, there's a big turnout.
A lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people. Okay, we remember that. Right? Now, if you remember, he had massive crowds in 2008 when he was first elected, when he first was running, massive crowds. Then what happened? Let me go to picture number two. Now, Google did not help me find any of these. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the Trump rallies, okay, from 2016. And you'll see a lot of people, right? Same kind of picture, is it not, mm-hmm. Stu?
Yeah, gigantic crowds and multiple venues, all over the country.
Multiple venues. Right. And so we know that Obama had them in 2008, and we know that Trump had them in 2016. Now, let's go back and see what happened after 4 years of Obama. How was the health of Obama's coalition? Here's the next picture. Now you could say that this stadium is, half full. I would say it's half empty. In fact, I would say it's more than half empty, because you'll see they curtained off the other part of the arena. So they're not even used. They're using a quarter of the arena, and only about, what would you say? A quarter of it is full. Half of it is full.
Maybe half, but I think it's less than half. Yeah. I mean, okay, and that's so of, now, half of a quarter, we should say. So we're
yes,
at an eighth.
Half of a quarter of an arena, okay? So if you remember, he started doing these things, and he's like, oh, boy, we're in trouble. And so he scaled it back. Here's the next photo. Again, you're not going to find these on Google. Oh, look at we really should stop doing arenas because this one is more than half empty of a quarter. Next one. So let's scale them back. Let's start doing public parks. I'll be under a gazebo. If you see this picture, there's probably, I'm going to be generous and say 400 people there. But you see on the other side of the gazebo, there's nobody. There's nobody around. It's not like people are, you know, really straining to see him. You're right up next to him in a gazebo. Next one. Oh, he started to put a mariachi band out front as people were gathering. This is shortly before President Obama, in his reelection campaign, came into the room and they had a mariachi band. And even that wouldn't attract anybody. Next. This is Donald Trump last night. This is Donald Trump last night. It looks a little like what Donald Trump had in 2016. Now, you tell me that Joe Biden can attract that. You tell me that Joe Biden has any of that fervor. In fact, I'll go a step further. You have with Joe Biden a situation that I think is going to rapidly decay. I don't know if you've heard the latest on Joe Biden, but from the Washington Post, Joe Biden wistfully recalled on Tuesday an era in which he was able to get along with segregationist senators, even though they didn't agree on much. Dismissing criticism from his party's left-wing flank that he's too conciliatory towards political adversaries, the former vice president told a crowd of about 100 people. Let me say that again. The former vice president told a crowd of about 100 people that one of his strengths was bringing people together. He knows that this makes him old-fashioned in the eyes of Democrats, but he remained adamant that political fellowship of that sort maintained with white supremacists in the 1970s was not just possible in today's climate, but it is the best answer to the forces elevating President Trump. If we can reach a consensus in our system, what happens? He then goes on to talk about how he was, he cited the late Senator James Eastland of Mississippi and Herman Talmadge of Georgia, who are both steadfastly opposed to civil rights and racial integration. I was in a caucus with James Eastland, Biden said, where he was introduced by so-and-so, the Democratic presidential candidate who had been who led his competitors in early polls of the blah, 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 blah. He said he impersonated the southern drawl of a Mississippi cotton planter. And he said, he never called me boy. He always called me son. Okay, well, you're white, Senator. You see, that was a slam. When you called somebody boy, you were usually talking to a black man, and that was a demeaning slam against you. Okay? You're white. Of course he never called you boy. You were white. So this guy that he was holding up and saying, I had a friendship with, I could get along with, and we could work together, he thought that black Americans belonged to an inferior race and warned that integration would cause mongrelization. Biden remarked I've been around so long, I worked with James Eastland, even in the days when I got there. Listen to this. The Democratic Party still had 7 or 8 old-fashioned Democratic segregationalists. You'd get up and argue like the devil with them, but then you'd go down and have lunch or dinner together. Okay, hang on just a second. There is something about, hey, I disagree on tax policy. I disagree on what we should do with the war. There's huge difference between, oh, by the way, I don't think these people over here are people. I don't know if we, you know, it's not like, hey, I sat with Hitler and I argued all day and all night. But then we had a delightful time and having some, you know, having some Hassenpfeffer. What?
This just goes back to a fundamental truth about Joe Biden running for president, is that he's not good at running for president. Like, he's already tried
it. Not.
He loses every time he tries it. This could go south quickly.
It could. It could. This is, by the way, from the Washington Post, where he's holding up. First of all, he's blowing a hole through the line that it was Republicans that were all the segregationists. No, it was still the Democrats. The Democrats in the 60s were still in with the Klan. Okay, there was no migration over to the Republican Party. That didn't happen. And here he is, A, qualifying that and saying, yes, that's, you know, we still had 7 or 8, you know, hardline segregationists who didn't even see black people as black people, but I had dinner with them. I could work with them. That was great. Okay, wait a minute. Hang on just a second. What does that say about how you can't talk to Donald Trump? You could have dinner with people who didn't think people were people, but you can't talk to Donald Trump. He's just too extreme. What? Where are you coming from? It is remarkable to me. By the way, another thing the press should be concerned about, the Democrats should be concerned about, the day before he launched his rally, Trump raised a record $24.8 million one day before. So he launches his campaign and he raises a record of $24.8 million. I'd say there's some passion there. By the way, we're going to go through some of the audio here in just a second. But I thought it was also interesting that Donald Trump is on the campaign trail. He raises record amounts. He has crowds that I have not seen a president ever have in re-election. And I've only seen one other president get it. And that was Barack Obama, who was the first black man in history to be a president. That faded quickly. This isn't fading. How are the Democrats going to be able to do this when they're infighting? And I'm telling you, even if Joe Biden gets the nomination, they're going to be infighting. Look at how far to the center he's trying to run. And even in that article from the Washington Post, it talks about how he is just brushing by the leftists. So he doesn't care what the left is saying. Apparently, we know that's not true because he changed his long-term stance on abortion. So he does care about that. But do you really think that the people who support Bernie Sanders are going to be supporting Joe Biden? I don't think so, because they actually believe in revolution and they don't see him as a revolutionary. You know who they see him as? Macron in France. He'll be another Macron for anybody who is actually on the left. All right, back in 1 minute. All right, so I'm really super happy that I have CarShield. I love CarShield because I have work trucks. And the last time I brought my truck in, I don't even remember what we brought it in for. I think it was just an oil change. All of a sudden, I get there, and it's a $6,000 bill. And I'm like, wow, that's expensive oil. Did the Prince of Saudi Arabia actually deliver it and put it in the engine? They said, no, you had a couple of sensors that went. $6,000. I'm like, would the thing drive without the sensors? Because I drove it in. It was fine. No, we had to replace them. But don't worry. CarShield covered it. What? CarShield covered it. Okay. Quick, before they change their mind, just give me the receipt. I think I paid like $34 or whatever it was for the oil change. That is the peace of mind that you can get. If your car has 5,000 to 150,000 miles, if it has a problem and it is covered in the warranty, CarShield takes care of it. It is really peace of mind. How do you come up with $6,000? How do you come up with $500? You don't have $500 to pay for a surprise. CarShield. Let them take care of it. Call CarShield now. 1-800-CAR-6000 or go to carshield.com. Use the promo code Beck and you're going to save 10%. 10% off now just using the promo code Beck. CarShield.com. 1-800-CAR-6000 or carshield.com. 10 seconds, station ID. Let me give you some audio. This is CNN as they cut away from the Trump rally. I can't imagine why they were cutting away. Listen to this.
2016 was not merely another four-year election. This was a defining moment in American history. Ask them right there. By the way, that is a lot of fake news back there. That's a lot. That's a lot.
All right, we've been watching the president kick off his re-election bid. He's been on stage for about 6 minutes. Within 2 minutes, he did talk about the economy, but within 4 minutes, it was attacks on the media. So he was talking about a bright, rosy future, but then quickly reverted to some of the same themes he's been talking about since he began running 4 years ago today.
Yeah, it really wasn't an attack on the media. Did you notice that, Stu? It was really an attack on CNN.
CNN specifically there, yeah.
Yeah.
And you think, too,
when they were chanting CNN sucks, I don't think that was the media. That was CNN.
And apples being apples, you probably don't want to pull out of coverage, especially when the guy's talking about you, right? Like, that's sort of a banana thing to do, isn't it? To try to hide the fact that you're being attacked? I mean, I honestly don't even understand it. I mean, like, obviously their audience is going to be pleased that Donald Trump does not like them. So why try to pull out and hide that? I don't even understand the reasoning.
I think because you'll notice they dump the video and the audio as soon as the attack stopped. So I think this is backseat driving, giving them a lot more credit than they probably deserve. But if I were making the call, I would be like, hold. The minute he changes subject so he's off of us, go. However, that's giving them CNN superpowers. I just don't think that's what they were scrambling. They were planning on doing. They're like, get back at the desk. You got to go. And he changed subjects as they left.
It must be bizarre for the average CNN viewer, though, because, I mean, you get basically, and this is CNN and MSNBC, but you get basically this constant barrage that everyone is abandoning Trump and he has no supporters anymore. And you brought this up at the beginning. I mean, I don't think there's any question that Donald Trump has massively passionate supporters. The 90% of them plus have not faded from their passion for Donald Trump. The question is, does he have a large enough group of passionate people to win an election? And obviously that's going to be what the answer that, you know, we're going to get that in 18 months. But I mean, the idea that you're going to say that, like, he doesn't have these passionate supporters and that they don't care is an asinine argument. I mean, that's his whole thing.
The question is, will it influence people? And I think it will. You know, Don Imus taught me something a long time ago. He said, if you don't have 30% of the audience that hates you, the available audience that hates you, you're not doing anything. You're not being different enough. You're not, you know, you 30% of the audience is what provides fuel for the other 70%. And he didn't mean it like go make people pissed off, et cetera, et cetera. He was just like, you're not saying anything if you don't have, you know, at least, you know, some people that really dislike you. So Donald Trump, he's got about 30% of the people who really don't like him. Now, he's also got about 30% of the people who love him. That was Don's other piece of advice. Only if you have that polarization, only if you have that real people who are just like, this guy really hacks me off, will you have the passion of the audience, maybe 30%, that will say, I love this guy. And it's the effect of the I love this guy that will sway the rest of the audience. Now, here's the problem with Donald Trump. Donald Trump has the media, and the media will expand all of the hatred of Donald Trump. They're going to be pushing that out. So as his 30% that love him create this atmosphere of wow, there's something exciting going on over here, which is important. The same time, the media is going to be tearing it apart and saying, no, look at all the people that hate him. Well, I got news for you. The media is not who they were in 2016. Who's watching CNN? Literally, who? Can you name him? Can you name the guy? Because I think we're almost down to that. It might be a family in Wisconsin that is still watching CNN. They don't have the juice that they used to. And Donald Trump, looking at it last night, still does.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
All right. Well,
I want to talk to you a little bit about X Chair. Mm-hmm. X Chair is just a great chair, and I miss it so much. I'm going to be back in studio next week, and I can't wait to get back into my X Chair. It will keep you propped up. I mean, look, I'm sitting here, and I got pillows behind me and everything else to keep my back straight. With the X Chair, don't have to worry about that. It has 10 or so adjustments. I honestly, it's like sitting in an aircraft. You're like, okay, wait a minute, once you learn how to adjust this chair, which doesn't take you very long, once you learn how to adjust this chair, it changes the way you sit, and it's so comfortable. Try it now. You owe it to at least try it. Try it for 30 days. You don't love it, ship it back. It's xchairbeck.com. You get $100 off right now, xchairbeck.com, or call 844-4XCHAIR. You're going to love it. 844-4XCHAIR or xchairbeck.com. Use the promo code XWheels and you get the great upgraded wheels as well for free. XWheels is the promo code, xchairbeck.com.
Go to blazetv.com/Glenn. Tonight we're going to take a preview of the museum that's coming here. Go to mercury1.org if you want to get tickets if you're in Texas, or blazetv.com/Glenn.
According to the FBI, the average loss in burglary is about $2,000 or just above. Now, that can be hard to recover from. Even so, only 1 in 5 have home security. And I think it's mainly because the security companies make it so hard to get security. But SimpliSafe is different. Their system protects every door, every window, every room with 24/7 professional monitoring. With SimpliSafe, there's no contract, no hidden fees, no fine print. It's designed to blend right into your home without wires, without drilling. It's easy to order. It's easy to set up. You can usually do it in under an hour. And the system has won tons of awards, from CNET to the New York Times Wirecutter. Around-the-clock monitoring, $15 a month without a contract. If you go to simplysafe.com/Glenn, you're going to get a free HD security camera when you order. That's a $100 value. So get your free HD security camera now by going to simplysafe.com/Glenn. Order today. simplysafe.com/Glenn. simplysafe.com/Glenn. This is the Glenn Beck Program, and we have Pat Gray joining us. I want to start with some audio here, Pat, and get your thoughts on this. This is Illinois State Senator Julie Morrison. She was at a town hall meeting, and a concerned guy, a gun owner, said, "You know, you're fining me, you're registering me just so I can be legal with my gun. How is this going to help anything? Because what other than law-abiding citizens are going to do this?" Listen to what she said.
Senator Morrison, you have an SB, you have a Senate Bill 107, to take away my semi-automatic firearms, to ban them. But there's a clause. I'm not taking your gun away from you. You just can't buy any new ones.
Want me to turn it over to the state police?
You can't buy new ones.
Unless I give you
a fine. Unless I pay a fine for each firearm and register them, then I get to keep it.
Okay.
So, if I get to keep it, if I pay a fine and register it, then how dangerous is it in the first place? Why do you need to ban it at all? Why do you need to try to ban my semi-automatic?
Now listen to her response. He's saying, how dangerous would it be if I'm going to pay the fine and register?
Well, you've just maybe changed my mind. Maybe we won't have a fine at all. Maybe we'll just be a confiscation and we won't have to worry about paying the fine.
Jeez.
There you go.
Now, if you watch this, this is on, we just have the audio, but if you watch this video, her body language is so arrogant. She is just saying, you better watch yourself, dude, because I'll just take your guns away.
That's amazing because, I mean, you could make that argument, and it's a good argument he makes, in that if a crime is, if something's bad and dangerous, like if child porn, if you could just like, well, I could pay a fine and then I can keep it, well, then you're saying child porn isn't really all that dangerous or all that awful, isn't it? So here is a situation with guns and where she kind of realizes the flaw in her logic and says, okay, yeah, we'll just confiscate them. That is an admission of what they actually want, right? Like that's what, in the end of the day, you know, if they could have everything that they desired, confiscation would be exactly that, because then there's no pushback against the power that they have.
And you could do that if you alter the U.S. Constitution. Now, there's a little process that you go through, but if you go through that process and it's successful, where you get 3/4 of the states on board with you, then go ahead and make that change.
Yeah, and you have to do a lot more than repeal it, obviously. You'd also have to ban the guns in the amendment, and then you'd have to make sure the states couldn't do it as well, because they would, of course.
Exactly.
Then you'd have to go door-to-door and clean out, 330 million guns, which is probably not go as well as you expect.
No.
So there's quite the process there to actually make that happen.
You'll never guess what happened to my guns up here at the ranch.
Oh, no. Did they all... are they gone in a boating accident?
How did you know that, Pat?
Because that's what
that
happened
is
to mine.
Amazing.
Yeah, I used
really?
To have an AR-15
Yours went
in
a boating accident.
And I lost them in a boating accident.
So,
didn't know dang it.
So Jeffy just lost all of his in a tornado.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Last night, I just left my guns out on the porch because I just, there's nobody here and I was going to get up this morning and do some shooting.
Okay.
So I left all my guns out on the porch and I believe bunny rabbits came and took all of them and buried them someplace. I don't know where they are.
And
I can't report it to the police. What am I going to... Oh, I was attacked by bunny rabbits who stole all of my stuff.
They'd never believe it.
I can't report that.
Mm-mm.
They'd never believe that.
Mm,
but they're
tragic.
All gone.
Nature is evil at times. And it's terrible to see. I love the idea, too, that like even if you were somehow able to get all the guns out of Americans' hands, there's certainly no way to 3D print guns or that technology's not around the corner, or to get them brought in illegally. Because the open border that the Democrats also desire would be a problem with this whole importing guns to a country that didn't no
wait
longer had
minute,
them.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Are you saying that these good families that are just coming here for a better life would be smuggling guns into our country?
I think
what's
there
next,
would be...
drugs?
I think there would be a percentage that might be interested in that market if it happened to open up.
And what I like about this is when you talk about this issue and the confiscation of guns in America, people will often call or tweet, oh, come on, it could never happen in America. We got the Second Amendment, can't confiscate. It's already happened in America. It's already happened. 2005, post Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, Louisiana, thousands and thousands of people had their guns confiscated. And many of them never got them back.
Never got them
ever.
Back. Never got them
the
back.
The National Guard went door to door, armed to the teeth, and confiscated Americans' guns. Wow.
And see, that's the way it will happen, though. That's the way it will happen. It'll never be, hey, we're going to pass a law, and on Tuesday we're all coming, because just nobody would put up with it.
It'll be an emergency.
But if there's an emergency and everybody is freaking out and the news coverage is elsewhere, you could have that happen.
Yes. Well, you could, and it has. So
so here's the thing. I would just suggest to everybody that perhaps
That's an airsoft gun you've got right there, isn't it? That's just a,
no. This is a SIG. This is a brand new SIG. This is great. You'd love this, Pat. This is the best gun I've ever shot.
Really?
It's a P320. It mm-hmm. is fantastic. It's the new gun that the military is starting to carry. And it is, I mean, yesterday during one of the breaks, I just went out, shot some targets, because I was getting pissed off by all this stuff. And 25 feet, about a 5 or 6 inch round at 25 feet hit 21 out of 21 shots. And that's the great thing is,
wow,
this holds 21, not 8 or whatever it is in New Jersey.
Oh, there's no reason for that. There's no reason to have multiple bullets.
21 shots.
There's no reason for that. There's one purpose and one purpose only for that gun, and that's to kill people. It's a military killing device. That's what it is. Shocking.
Well,
shocking that you have it right there in your hand. I'm scared. I'm frightened right now.
I do use it. I will tell you that you're frightened.
Yes.
I'm in another state.
I'm still disturbed. I'm very disturbed and very scared.
Here's the thing. You know, I use it for sporting, but the only reason why I got into it as a sport is mm-hmm. because I was going to make sure that if anybody came into my house to threaten me and my family, they would be dead before I would. and mm-hmm. so, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's kind of insensitive.
It was designed to kill people.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. It was. It's a gun. It wasn't supposed to be a doorstop.
No. In fact, if you use it as a doorstop, you shouldn't have one.
Right. Right.
just saying. If you don't realize that, yes, that is what this machine does, is kill people. Yes, if you don't know that, you shouldn't have a gun.
Exactly.
I'd like to suggest one more thing. Mm-hmm. Stu, can you talk to Tim today in our marketing department or our you know, store department? I would like to start selling come and take it flags and come and take it bumper stickers, because I think everybody in Illinois, if you believe the what you do, you need to start flying the flag. In Texas, this is a gift from Texas. Okay, mm-hmm. You go ahead and take our flag. And what was the name of the battle that came from?
Gonzales, right? The battle of
it happened after the Alamo, right?
Yes, it did. Between the Alamo and San Jacinto.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so what happened was they had this ceremonial cannon given by the Mexican dictator. They said, we've got it. We left this cannon behind. The Americans, you know, we left this cannon behind. And they said, go get it. And so they went, and the Texans buried it and flew the flag that says, come and take it. And it didn't work out well for the dictator.
They actually couldn't take it.
They didn't take it. So that cannon remained in the hands of Texans. So may I just suggest we start looking a little more like Texans all across the country. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Come and take it. Oh, that's wrong to say. Mm-hmm. I think he's advocating violence.
So aggressive.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so aggressive. I'm so I'm so hurt. And he had a gun on screen while he said it. Oh, my gosh. He was out of control. All right, Pat. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
More on the border, more on President Trump, and so much more coming up in just a second. First, let me tell you about our sponsor. It is Simply Safe. Simply Safe is the company that is the only one, unless you're doing like, you know, big corporate security for like Apple or somebody like that, unless you have a person that is watching cameras when a phone call comes in because an alarm goes off, whether it is a small little company or your home, you get put to the bottom of the list of the 911 calls. But if you happen to have a lot of money and you are somebody who has somebody watching cameras, Well, then your response time is 3.5 times faster. SimpliSafe is now the only company that offers this kind of protection. Because you have cameras. In fact, you can put a camera in. You'll get it for free. It's a $100 value. It's an HD camera. So it's not like, I'm looking for a guy that looks like this black blob. No. You've got to have a little more than black and white. And you have to be able to see the features of the person. So they'll give you this HD camera for free if you order now at simplysafebeck.com. And when somebody breaks into your house, they can verify it. They call 911 and say, yes, we have the picture of the guy breaking in. Here it is. You get 3.5 times faster response. They're the only company that does this. This is the best security money can buy. SimpliSafeBeck.com. SimpliSafeBeck.com. Go there now. Get your free HD camera. It's SimpliSafeBeck.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. Welcome to the program. Let me go through some of the audio from the Trump rally last night. Here is a black voter in Florida. Oh, boy. What's he going to say? Listen up.
Yeah. Come here, Mike. Mike, this is a guy from my community. How do you feel like the president has delivered on issues when it comes to black America?
Man, honestly, as a black American, I have never seen a president do so much for our community as this president. You're talking about lowest unemployment. You got prison reform, First Step Act, urban revitalization. This president is delivering on his promises, and he's unifying the country on top of that. You know, over on the left, I had an opportunity to go and see the anti-Trump protesting, and it was all just negativity. All the energy in this room was electric and positive. You know, conservatives call me patriot, American, brother. Leftists, they call me other things that I will not say on TV. But as Americans, we are united under this president.
It's good to see Lawrence Jones, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
Lawrence is really, you know, we have had so many people graduate from the Blaze and they go on to do amazing things, and Lawrence is our latest alumni who is now working at Fox. He was the reporter there. This is not something that you're going to hear on mainstream media at all unless you're watching Fox. They're just not going to cover that.
Yeah.
And Lawrence just went to a... an anti-Trump, or no, I think it was a gay pride rally, where he said he was told over and over again, go back to Fox, there's lots of cotton to pick.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
The racism is there. You know, I will say one thing about the voters' comments, and, you know, look, I think it's great that you finally see, you know, someone who's stepping up and saying, hey, things are actually good. We're not all in concentration camps, as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants you to believe, which we need to get into that later as well.
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Don't unleash this one yet.
No. This is the point is that, like, I don't think we, especially as conservatives, should look at Donald Trump doing something for the black community. Donald Trump should be doing things and has done things that he believes benefits everyone, right? And the black community is part of America. Right. So there's I don't even like the idea of the thought of a black community or a white community. Like these are like traps set by people who do identity politics and want us to all look at each other as groups instead of individuals. And like the idea that the black unemployment rate is at a historic low is a fantastic thing. But it's part of a larger development that unemployment is better for everyone and should be better for everyone. So I understand why, as someone who has been overlooked largely by Democrats for many, many years, how you'd say, oh, hey, look, Donald Trump is doing something for the black community. But I hope Donald Trump's motivation is like, and I think it is, it's just you're just doing things that are right. And if you do things that you believe are right and they work, it's going to benefit everybody.
So that's the amazing thing. You know, look, we're $22 trillion in debt. How much money, Stu, have we spent on eradicating poverty in our day?
Oh yeah, it's tens of trillions of dollars.
Yeah, it's I think 21 or 22 trillion dollars since the Great Society speech with Johnson. It hasn't affected anything. Here's something that Donald Trump did without a program, just improve the economy, just free people to work. free people to create businesses. And look what happens. The government doesn't understand. The government thinks it's the solution when indeed the government is the problem. You know, when you have the government regulating absolutely everything, it is only eating into money, which is stopping people from doing things and creating more and spending that money and being able to hire people, et cetera, et cetera. Just get the government out of the way and trust the people. And that is the real problem with socialism. That is the problem with progressivism. They say it's about the people, but it's not. It is about enslaving the people because they don't trust people to make the right decisions. Well, I don't need a babysitter, and I've already had a mom and dad. Get the hell out of my way. I'm in charge of my life.
You're listening to Glenn Beck. The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
You know, I can handle stupidity. I can handle stupidity. There are people in life that are just stupid. And they weren't gifted with, you know, all the brains that you might have. I feel many times that I'm one of those guys that's just not so gifted when it comes to the brains department. But I try. I refuse to live in self-imposed ignorance. I actually do my homework, and I would imagine you do too. That you want to be a better person. You want to learn. You want to know what the truth is. Ocasio-Cortez is not one of those people. She is living in a prison of self-imposed ignorance. And enough is enough. I begin there in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, I've been a customer of Goldline now for over 10 years. And, you know, there's some things that you should know. I've told you forever that I purchase gold and I look at it as an insurance policy. And that insurance policy, I will stop talking about gold when the country and the world stops running towards insanity. When they start to get a handle on fiscal responsibility. We're $22 trillion in debt. No country, nothing. There's never been a debt that size, ever. When you look at our actual debt because of all of our promises, we're approaching $200 trillion. It's not going to happen. So what does that mean? Well, that means usually you inflate the money. Now, why did the Fed just roll rates back? Well, they'll tell you it's because the economy, they're concerned about the economy. So they're going to want to roll those rates back and make money more cheap. Well, when you make money more cheap, you've got to inflate the money. You have to print more money. So people are spending more money. That's devaluing your dollar. When the Fed raises rates, it's to slow things down because the economy is overheating. It's more importantly at this point, the reason why they inflated the interest rates is they have to grab some of that money back. They got to destroy some of that money unless we're going to go into some sort of hyperinflation. So it's not a good thing for the value of your dollar. In 1949, a dollar was worth a dollar. Okay? A dollar. By 1964, that $1 in 1964, that $1 back during the war was now worth 45 cents. If I had a 1965 dollar and I put it in the bank for an investment, if I didn't get interest or anything else on it, I just put that dollar in the day I was born in 1964, that dollar would be worth 18 cents. That's how you devalue money. And this is going to happen all over the world. and the world is going to go into chaos unless people are prepared. So I've been trying to get you prepared. Goldline can help you. I have gold. I have purchased more gold. I think that we are headed for trouble. Please consider Goldline. Find out what's new. Discuss how to purchase gold or silver with new IRA options. Their secured storage facility, so you don't have to hold it yourself. Their portal for online trading. You can find out just how much your portfolio is worth right now and talk to them about adding precious metals, physical precious metals, from the only company that I trust, and that is Goldline. 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE, or goldline.com. Boy, there are so many ways. There are so many ways that I could take this next break. And I have done a lot of thinking about it, because at first I was sad, and then I was really angry, and then I got more angry, and then I really started to listen more and more, and I got even more angry, and I thought, this is not helpful. So, righteous indignation is really important at times. But right now, I'm not sure we can figure out the difference between just everybody's anger and righteous indignation. When you have reason to be angry, it's not always the best thing, the most helpful thing, to be angry. But you're at least justified in it. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is, she's a sideshow. And I believe the people who are in the Democratic Party, they know that. She is, she's just a hired gun. That's all she is. They wind her up and she goes out and she, you know, bangs the cymbals together. I know what that's like to be somebody who is viewed as effective and could go out and just bang cymbals together like those little wind-up monkeys. But it takes intelligence and courage to not be one of those wind-up monkeys and be in the service of a group that is using you. Cortez, for everything we ever heard about Sarah Palin, on how stupid she was, I have not heard that about Ocasio-Cortez from anybody in the mainstream media. And she's at the point to where I think we should discuss having her obtain a license to be able to walk around with this much stupidity. Because she is becoming extraordinarily dangerous to the truth. The problem is that, you know, if we don't talk about the truth, you lose your ability to be able to find the truth, to decipher the truth, to recognize the truth. And I don't think she's that. I think she just is so filled with her own self and surrounded by people who always agree with her, that she doesn't realize just how stupid she is. And I say this with a guy, I'm a guy who has deep, deep personal experience with stupidity. When I was 30, I realized I knew nothing. And I tried to figure out what I really believed. Then September 11th happened, and I knew nothing. And then Obama was elected, and I knew nothing. and I worked hard to understand what was happening. Then Trump ran, and I realized I know nothing, and I worked really hard to understand what was going on. To be a citizen, to be somebody who is not a detriment, that's hard work. It's hard work. Yesterday, she said what's going on our border is a concentration camp. I'll play the audio if we have to later. She said Donald Trump has built concentration camps. Boy, I'm trying not to be demeaning here and talk down to her. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, do some homework. Do your own homework here. That's wildly insulting. It's insulting, and I'll get to this in a minute. It's insulting to Jews. It's insulting to anyone who had anyone in a concentration camp or knows what a concentration camp is. Let's look into China and what's happening in the concentration camps with Muslims today in China. Let's look at the concentration camps in North Korea. See, here's what a concentration camp doesn't do. It doesn't release you into society where you can build a better life. A concentration camp usually ends in your death. People didn't volunteer to get on the train. There weren't people who were like, oh, this train's headed towards Auschwitz. It's a death train. Just like in Mexico, they call it the death train. Yeah, it's a death train. I'm going to just ride on top. I got to get on that train. Nobody was doing that. Everybody was trying to get off that train. They knew what that train meant. People now are clamoring to what we now call a death train because it is so dangerous. So many people fall off. So many people are killed on that train just trying to get to what? Our concentration camp? Boy. Whoa, are we evil? We are so evil, we don't even have to have a plan to exterminate a race. We don't even have to have a plan to round people up. We don't need technology. We need no money. They're lining up to come into our ovens. How insulting is this? In a 3-foot hole in a barn out in the middle of nowhere in Poland, a little boy was about 8. Not with his family, alone, was told to go to this farm and the people would help him. He was Jewish. When they opened up that little hole where he couldn't stand up straight, it was only 3 feet, he saw 20 people in that hole, all laying down. He got in. They put the wood, the floorboard back over that hole, and they put hay over the floorboards. In this barn in the middle of nowhere in Poland is Jewish people, gay people, gypsies. Anyone who was just deemed inferior, not helpful to the country, a problem, as they were being rounded up systematically for extermination, because not a single one of them deserved to live. Because of why? Because of who they were, something they couldn't change. They were Jewish. They were a gypsy. They were gay. In a time like this, to where if you dare try to help, if you dare even speak out against what was happening, if you dare even say, what's happening in that camp? They would show you what was happening in that camp. You would see the shower, and it would be the last thing that you would see. And yet there were 6,000 brave people who stood against it. One family had dug a hole and hid women and children and families that had somehow or another escaped that death. One of the survivors who now lives in New York City, here in America, a man who quietly worked as a high school teacher, never told anyone about his experience in that hole, told me about what life was like growing up as a 10-year-old, hiding in the mud in your own filth, with the only light of your childhood is the light that slips through the floorboards just above your head, not being able to stand, not being able to go anywhere. He told me the story about when they were searching the barn and a baby was crying, just under 1 year old. And he watched as the mother sobbed and pushed that child's face into her bosom to silence the baby, and the baby died. I'm going to put this story into perspective for Ocasio-Cortez in 1 minute. There's a black market for frequent flyer miles. At least half a dozen online markets have listed created by criminals who have stolen frequent flyer miles and trying to resell them, and people don't detect it because they don't check their frequent flyer miles for, you know, months, sometimes many months. So what are you going to do about it? I mean, you have so many things to worry about. You can't worry about this. You can't stop this on your own. You can't watch everything. In fact, no company can watch everything and check every transaction at every business. It's not going to happen. But you need somebody on your side so you can put this worry away. You need LifeLock. I have it. They have saved me several times. They've saved Pat. They've saved Stu, because we all have LifeLock. This is something I didn't have in the 90s because I was like, oh, come on. Now you have to have it. LifeLock.com. Use the promo code BECK. LifeLock.com. Go to LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck and you'll save 10% off your membership. Or you can just call them at 1-800-LIFELOCK, 1-800-LIFELOCK, or lifelock.com, promo code Beck. 10 seconds, station ID. So, Miss Cortez, a 10-year-old who watches a mother smother her own child just to stop it from crying so they're not discovered. That's not what's happening on our border. In fact, children are being used. Children are being bought and sold. So they will be found. And they can go into our concentration camps. And they will be released. And they'll be released into a country that people are lining up to get into. If we suck so much, how come everyone from all around the world is trying to come here? Quite frankly, I'd like to have more of them and less of people like you. Go to another country. Now, I know that's not right to say, because we all have to do our thing to make this a better country, and we all have a right to be here, and I hate it when people say, you don't like it, then leave it. I don't like that. But quite honestly, I'm sick and tired of always being torn down. And for the truth to be so distorted, you are either a moron, and there's nothing that can be done, or something seriously wrong with you and your priorities. You went to Boston U. You're not a dummy. How is it you can be this stupid on something so important? A concentration camp is in North Korea. A concentration camp is currently going on in China. It's not happening on our border. And if you really cared, you would have been down there with me at the border when Obama was putting people in cages. And I begged for anybody to pay attention. You're only doing this because your puppet masters are telling you what to say. It is so clear you haven't thought anything through. Yep, yep, okay, I'll say that. Yep, yep. Just don't ask me any questions because I can't go into any depth at all on this. There comes a time when people have to say enough is enough. Enough is enough. I mean, we can laugh at stupid people. We can feel sad for stupid people. But when stupid people, who are not really stupid, they're just living in self-imposed ignorance so they can get a job away from a bar and then start wearing $5,000 clothes and live in apartments in a lifestyle that they would have never dreamt just because they're attractive, they know how to cause a crowd, and they can just come on out and say anything. When we're at this point in history, concentration camps will come back. They will come back. They're not happening at the border, but they will come back if this kind of self-imposed ignorance continues to grow in our country. Get a life. Educate yourself. There's no reason you can't do it.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
All right. Our commercial this half hour is Real Estate Agents I Trust. Real Estate Agents I Trust, you know, people are voting with their feet right now. They're moving to Texas. You know, we worry about the 1,000 people a week moving in from different states. And for some reason, we're not worried about the 600 people a day that are coming across our border in Texas. Oh, no, that's not going to change anything. Anyway, people are moving with their feet. People are moving from, you know, the north and states like New York, where they're just being taxed out, moving down south. Now, how do you know what the right place is, the right community, the right neighborhood, the right school when you've not lived anywhere in that area? You need a real estate agent you can trust. How do you sell your home when everybody seems to be selling their home? You need the best real estate agent you can find, and we'll find them for you. You'll have them on the phone within an hour of contacting us, most cases. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com.
The museum is coming to Dallas. If you want to check it out, go to mercury1.org, get your tickets. I'm hosting a tour. Glenn's hosting a tour. Lots of great stuff at the Mercury Museum in Texas.
You know, I didn't have a lot to say on Father's Day, and I was going to, and then I didn't. As a dad, I am working so hard to be a good dad, and I fail so often. But I'm trying to be a better man every day. If you're a longtime listener to this program, you know that my dad and I didn't have a close relationship when I was growing up. It was a very complicated family. It was a mess. And then my dad and I got very close, and he was my hero. In my 30s and early 40s, he was my hero. And then we had to confront abuse. And my dad was revealed to me to be a monster. I mean, a monster. And I've never talked about it, and I will someday, but I've had a very, very difficult time in the last few years dealing with this. And I thought my family was a shipwreck. We had a family therapist. We all went through therapy for this recently, and she said, "I've never seen a shipwreck of a family like this before. Just an on the rock shipwreck." And there's always somebody who can show you a bigger shipwreck. And I picked up a book recently. It's called Climbing Out of the Wreck. And I picked it up, and it's one of those books that it doesn't take too long to read, and you start to pick it up, and you are just, you're amazed by the story, and you don't put the book down until you're finished. And it's also one of those books that you read, and you're like, okay, please have a happy ending. And it does. It is a very brave tale told by somebody who is under pseudonym Christine Stein. And she joins us now. Hello, Christine. How are you?
Hi, Glenn. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I was really deeply moved by your story and the courage that it took to be who you are today. Can you just give the audience a little brush of your childhood?
Well, I want to start, and I want to say I'm so sorry that you had to go through a hard childhood. I know what that's all about. My father was a sexual predator, and my mother was an alcoholic drug user. So you can just imagine what that was like for children to go through. It would be even hard for an adult to take it all in, but it was a nightmare, you know. But we did have times that we had love in our family. I did get that at times, but then there were these other times that no child should have to ever go through.
Your father
do their thing. Go ahead.
Your father was sexually abusive to your sisters, and it even went to court, and your mother testified against your sister, even though she knew it was true.
Yes. You know, the sad thing about this, Glenn, there is, that's not just like that has just happened, that it happens a lot. There's a lot of mothers that were the husband, or the boyfriend that has sexually abused their child. But my mother did that. And I think my mother was such a lost soul in so many ways. But my mother, her childhood was my grandfather had raped her and all her sisters, and he was an alcoholic, raging alcoholic. So, there's no excuse for her behavior at all. But when I was at a point in my life that I stood back and I said, who are these people that have abused me so much and my siblings, I started looking into really what they came from. And my mother came out of a horrible situation. And on the other hand, my father was educated, had loving parents, and it just didn't make any sense. You know, they couldn't really wrap their heads around, later on finding out what he was up to. So, you can kind of say some people are just born evil, and that's the only way I can describe that. I think my mother's situation is what you're taught, and she passed it, on. She never got therapy to deal with it. And then she went on when I was about 14 years old, she was taken away. She lost her mind, and I didn't see her for almost a year, but I would see her off and on, but she didn't come back to the house. And she was a different person, because there was times that my mom could really be wonderful, and then there was times with the alcohol and her depression and the drugs. One time I watched my mother try to kill herself in the bathroom when I was about 7 years old, and nobody should have to see their mother try to do something like that. It was pretty devastating. But she twice in her life she tried to kill herself, and it was it's very painful now because I love my mother. I hold on to the good parts of my mom, but you know, these other things I want people to understand, I guess people like us, that, you know, when we go through something, that we are scarred and we are traumatized, and, you know, we are still fighting those scars, and they kind of open up at times.
Christine, because I went through this with my dad, and my father was raped when he was young, and had a horrible, horrible childhood. And so I attached compassion, and I loved my dad. And I loved my dad that he was working to conquer it. And at one point in his life, he just gave up. And it was about the time he was about 70, 75 years old. He just gave up, and he became an absolute monster. And I'm struggling, you know, it was with Tony Robbins, and he reminded me of a lot of the good stuff my father taught me. And because I had forgotten some of those things, or I had dismissed those things, because I just took my dad's teachings and everything and threw it out the window. And I just rejected everything, as he said, was a lie. And I'm starting to put those things in order again. But that's really difficult. Have you?
It is. I'll just break it down. I went to visit my mother, and my dad was there. And this is, you know, I'm about 22, 23 at this time. I go in. I have a son at this point, and he's a little boy. And I go in there, and I could tell my father was ready to attack me psychologically. I just knew it was going to happen. And he started attacking me and then asking me sexual questions and saying, who are you? What are you? And something took over. And I looked at him and I said, I know I'm not you. I never will be you. And, you know, what you taught me is not to be you. Within, you know, like I'd say less than 10 minutes, I got up. I walked out of the house with my son. I went to the car, and I was crying, because it's pretty emotional when you have a parent attacking you like that, which I had it all my life. It was years of this. My son looked at me, and he was like, I know who you are, Mommy. I love you. I think you're wonderful. And I thought to myself, being in that nightmare of that man that have abused me pretty much all my life, and then I go within 10 minutes to something that loves me and shows me I can do the right thing and live a great life. It really psychologically showed me I don't have to put up with that person. I'm so much more than what this person would make me feel like garbage, that I was able to go on to give life to somebody that loves me and adores me. And it really pulled me through it. So it's kind of like those little moments in life that kind of tell you, wow, because it is. And I guess, you know, from your situation, you kind of slide back at times and you feel bad about yourself. You kind of reflect on what's happened to you. Or sometimes you react to things and you don't even realize it was something from your childhood. And it doesn't mean that we're not good people. I think, you know, in my life, I'm not cruel to people. I've actually lived a life of trying to save things, animals and people, because it kind of feels like I'm saving myself at times. So that urgency, I'm a little addicted to it because I want to fix it as fast as I can.
Right.
Because I guess somebody, you know, I wish that somebody could come and help me. I remember the police were always in and out of our homes because the neighbor, you know, the neighbors would call. And I remember one time a police officer came up to me, and I was about 7 or 8 years old, and my sister was with me. And it was all night. My mother was wasted and screaming. My father had came in, you know, from God only knows where. So the fight was going on. And at one point, my mom picked up a steak knife. My mom would, in her rage, as she would pick up knives and threaten, you know, my father or us kids screaming at us with them, that the officer came up to me and he bent down and he was like, are you okay, little girl? And the whole time I wanted to say, please take me with you. Just take me out of here. I'm so tired. But I said, oh, I'm fine. And people need to understand children, why they do that is because we're scared to leave everything that we know, even though it might be a nightmare. It's like you want out of it, but then you realize I'll be taken, you know, from this home that I know, my siblings and my parents can be okay at times. And you hold on to those things, even though you're being abused.
Christine, I would like to figure out a way, because I know you're keeping your identity, because there's still problems with the family and everything else.
Yes,
and I completely
definitely.
Relate. I would love to find a way to where we could keep your identity and I could sit down with a podcast and talk to you, because there's a lot of wisdom in your book. And the good thing we've just talked about the bad things. There is a way out. You did climb out of this wreck, and not all of your siblings have. And I understand.
Yeah.
I mean, it causes real problems with your siblings, and it's just, you know, the walking on eggshells doesn't ever seem to end.
Like one of my sisters, you know, she's homeless. She became a drug addict. She was a beautiful young girl. And the last time I saw her was a few years ago. I mean, I hate to say it this way, but, you know, teeth were missing out of her. She had holes in her face. And I could barely really communicate with her. All she wanted was money to get more drugs. And I just had to stop the relationship. But she's very a mean, violent kind of person. And she chose, you know, and my other siblings, the difference between myself and now two of my other sisters, we want a good life and we want to give it to our children. And we, you know, I realize if I stay a victim and angry, I'm just going to pass that on to my child, and this is never going to stop. And I, you know, I ended up pregnant in my early 20s, and I was in a situation, you know, I had no business, because still I was working through all these issues and going through a lot, and my environment wasn't the greatest. And I remember I went to the doctor thinking I was sick, and he said, "Christine, you're pregnant." And I was like, "Oh, no, no, no," because in my family, abortions were the norm. You know, I took several of my sisters there. My mother had them. This was just my environment. But something really hit me hard, and I sat in my car and I cried. Now, religion and God wasn't a big thing in my family either. Actually, my father would put people that believed in religion down, saying that they were weak people, when he actually was, you know, the sick person. But I started to pray. Even though I didn't really know how to pray, I just started saying, if there's a God, I need guidance. I need help because I'm scared. And I'm not here to tell people what to do. I'm not at all, but I'm just telling my story. And something came over me, and it became super clear. And I just knew I can have this baby. I can work hard. I will help this baby. This baby will never have, you know, things that happened to me happen to it. And my son is 33 now, and he's a doctor, and he's in situations where he helps save lives. And he became a scientist as well. And he studies cancer and AIDS work on, go ahead.
Christine, I would love to have you on a podcast, because you're just beginning to tell the great part of the story. I urge you to pick up the book. It is Climbing Out of the Wreck, Christine Stein. It's a tough childhood. You think you have somebody, your kids or anybody says, I've got it so tough. Give them this book. And then it shows how to climb out of the wreck. It's a fantastic book. It's Climbing Out of the Wreck by Christine Stein. Hope to talk to you again, Christine. Thank you so much. Our sponsor this half hour is Norton Security. Right now, there are 24,000 malicious mobile apps blocked every day worldwide. 24,000. Recent security report details that lifestyle apps are the main targets. Most of these apps leak phone numbers, further sensitive information like device location also being made accessible. Oh, perfect. It would be completely impossible to monitor or check each of these apps for vulnerability issues. It's essential that there's an open ticket for cyber criminals to do their work. It's essential for them to be able to get into you to get your stuff. And they're using these things. Now, this is one reason why you need Norton Secure VPN. It's a virtual private network. It encrypts all of your connections, even on public Wi-Fi. So go ahead, try to find me. You're not going to find me because I'm encrypted. So I'm using, and I go onto one of these dangerous apps. I have one of these. It's going to direct all of their attention elsewhere. Nobody's following you. Nobody's tracking you. Nobody's hacking into your life. Not all VPNs offer a truly private network. Norton does. It's a truly private network. They do not track your usage. They don't sell it to anybody else. They just give you privacy. Norton.com/VPN. Sign up for it now. It's $3.33 a month. If you sign up for the year, do it now. It's Norton.com/VPN. Welcome to the program. I'm debating whether I should talk to you about something, because it's going to need to be clarified as what I'm about to say is not racist. However, that's exactly what racists say when they're about to say something racist, but what I'm about to say is not racist at all. Next hour. Don't miss it. Glenn Beck.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
Trump had a great day yesterday in Florida. And, you know, Bernie Sanders says Trump is running scared. No, he's actually not. He's running a very, very well-coordinated campaign in comparison to the last one. This one is really well-organized. And did you notice how many people showed up? Did you notice that they were waiting in line for 40 hours? Tell me the Democrat that's happening for. Who can generate this kind of excitement and passion? We will see if the Democrats can come up with one, but I want to talk to the Trump supporters and those on the fence, and even those like George Will, who are not in the game. I want to have a chat next in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
For years, people have been asking me to put together a cruise because they know that our audience likes to get together and have a good time. And it's always sounded like a good idea. But I'm just not one for my wife is. I'm not one for a cruise to, you know, maybe Alaska, maybe. Well, I was asked by a company out of Italy who has been launching these beautiful new cruise ships. To do a cruise in the Mediterranean. And Glenn, you can go wherever you want. And I'm like, really? Venice? Athens? The Holy Land? Yes. Okay. So we put a cruise together because these are the things that I want to see. These are the things that are important that I teach my children. What happened here? What does this mean for us? Why are our values the way they are? And I was excited about that. And then they said, hey, if you want to do classes and, you know, have people join you. And I said, anybody? They said, yeah. I said, Rabbi Daniel Lappin, because there's nobody better on the Middle East than Rabbi Daniel Lappin. David Barton, because there is nobody that is better on the Republic than David Barton. For Venice. Well, it's going to kind of fall down on me, but that is about the Enlightenment, and I want to talk about the coming out of the Dark Ages and what that means. Bill O'Reilly is going to join us, and he's going to be doing stuff with me in the Holy Land. This is a phenomenal experience, really once in a lifetime, with real historians, except for me. All you have to do is go to comesailaway.com, comesailaway.com. Grab your tickets. You know, this audience is so cool. There are people that want to come, and they want to come by themselves. And they're like, I can't get anybody to join with me, or I can only afford me, and I really want to go and do this. And so they've asked the cruise company, are there other people like that maybe want to share a room together? And, on some cruises that might be frowned upon. You never know what you get. But our audience has all these people who are like, I'm going alone and I want to make some new friends. And so they're matching people. They're introducing people together and say, you know, do you want to board together? Can you do that for a week or 10 days? And it's just, you know, if you've ever been in with our audience in big crowds, you know what it's like. We're all going to be family on this ship, and it's going to be unforgettable. You never have to pull out your wallet the entire time, not for a tip or anything. ComeSailAway.com. Airfare included. Everything's included. ComeSailAway.com. It happens next spring, and you can get on board right now. While there is space available, comesailaway.com. Go there now. Comesailaway.com. So last night in Florida, the president had quite an amazing turnout. And as I showed on hour number one on this broadcast today, I compared pictures from 2008 to 2016. Obama's crowds, Trump crowds, they're the same. But when Obama went back out in 2012, he wasn't generating excitement. In fact, he had venues that were, 8,000, 10,000, 20,000, and they had to curtain off at least half of the arena, and it was still half to a quarter full. The excitement was gone on Barack Obama at that time. Now, he still won, but the excitement was gone. And there was no excitement with Mitt Romney. There was just there was no excitement. So what happened to Donald Trump on his first reelection stop? How did his crowd look? Amazing. People waited for 40 hours to get in. They camped out for almost 2 days to be able to get into the arena. And it was jam-packed. Here's MSNBC on the Trump voters. Are they fired up? Listen to this.
We will be here. Back to you.
Well, it actually sounds, Peter, like the rally has begun early.
Some
energized people behind you.
You can imagine a lot of big MSNBC fans here this morning. Some good conversation here on the sidelines of the Amway Center. So, yeah, these folks are fired up, and these are the folks that reminds you of what it looked like, ahead of the 2016 campaign. These folks vow to crisscross the state to support the guy. We'll be here to watch.
You'll be doing more than watching, I think. There it is. These are people who are active. These are people that if he can build now on this coalition, he will win. If you have 30% of your base that is just rock solid, not going anywhere. Now, there's a lot of people that I think are either not taking polls or don't want to be included in the polls. Because they don't want anybody to know they're a Trump supporter. And I will tell you, all sides need to come together. The threat to the country is the biggest in my life. We have people who are now talking about dismantling the free market. This is not like, oh, well, they're going to be for higher taxes. This is dismantling of the free market. You see what they're for. You see what they're doing. You see what they believe. It's not what I believe. And it's not a difference in policy. It is a difference in direction. Do we become a socialist nation and do a socialist experiment and throw all of this away? And this is not hyperbole. Every other candidate in my lifetime was just a worse version of who I was voting for. Okay. They all have problems. They all have, but our country wasn't at the point of destruction. Our country is at the point of destruction. And on top of that, our country now is given a choice of people who say they do want to end the free market. So there's a few things that we have to do. First of all, can we play the audio from George Will on his prediction on what's coming in 2020?
The biggest obstacle Democrats face in winning the White House.
It seems to me that they will run the White House, given the fact that the president has a very narrow band. He can't fall below 42%, but he can't get above 46%. The White House is theirs to win if they don't kick it away. It's theirs to lose. Now, they were indispensable to electing Mr. Trump in the first place in 2016. And sometimes they do seem to me to be out to prove that that wasn't a fluke, that they could do it again. But what they want to do is give people a chance to make it easy to vote for Democrats, which means don't start your campaign, as Kamala Harris did in a cable appearance, by saying, let's get rid of private health insurance, thereby frightening 180 million Americans who have employer-provided health insurance, and by the way, frightening organized labor, which today exists primarily to negotiate health care as untaxed compensation for its members. So if they would simply understand that the American people are not up in arms, the American people really would like a return to something like normality, it seems to me it's theirs to win.
So, George, I know your job is to provide analysis, but you're dealing with people who are not honest brokers. They can present themselves any way they want, but we now know the truth of who they are because the masks have come off. And so there is no return to normalcy. There isn't a return to that. Even with Donald Trump in a second term, we know what we have. Where in the first term, we didn't know what we were going to get. We knew his rhetoric. We knew what he had said in the past. We knew who he had funded in the past, the Nancy Pelosi's and the Harry Reid's. We knew all of that. But we didn't have a record. We now have a record, and we can see that the president has done the things that he said he would. Now, he didn't do Obamacare, but I don't think that's his fault. That is, he left that open. He would have signed anything. That is the Republicans' fault. When it comes to the border, I don't think I've seen a president do more than this guy on the border. And he's taking all kinds of heat, and quite frankly, he's alone. You know, Ted Cruz, where are you, dude? We need you on the front lines. Texas is being destroyed. Where are these guys? Now, there's a couple of things. Conservatives, there's many things about Donald Trump that bother me. His tariffs really bother me. They could lead us into real economic turmoil. If there is another big, huge hit, I don't know what Donald Trump will do. But I do know what the left will do. And they will take us away from the free market. If George Bush said I had to destroy the free market to save the free market, God only knows what people who hate the free market will do. And it is coming. So who's best prepared? Well, you could say it's, you know, Justin Amash, which I disagree with. And you could go and vote for Justin, but Justin is not going to win if he even runs. And I know principle. And I know this is the opposite of what I told you before, but that's because Donald Trump didn't have a record. What I feared Donald Trump would do, he didn't do. And I said I would be the first to tell you. I wanted to be wrong. Well, I was. Now, I still have concerns about some things that Donald Trump is going to do or could do or may not do. But that's all speculation. And I do know what the left wants to do. And I now have a record of Donald Trump and what he's doing. And it's not perfect. But we are looking at the end of the republic. And there's nothing that could convince me that that is hyperbole. And I urge you to try. Show me. I am a libertarian, and I'm not usually a pragmatist. I'm somebody who is like, no, this is the right thing to do. But when you come up to this situation to where your enemy is saying, I'm an enemy, when the other side is saying, I've got to silence these people, I've got to end the free market, I've got to control people's lives, they are an enemy of your freedom. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I'm not going to get on a bandwagon this time. I'm not. What I learned in 2016 was humility is a really good thing. And you don't always know. You do all the research in the world and you still don't always know what to do and what is going to happen. Conservatives, the people who have been against Donald Trump, I can understand your feelings. I really can. And I have grave concerns still. But they pale in comparison to what I believe is the destruction of the Republic. Biden can say whatever he wants, but Biden's going to have to move left. And his running mate is going to be even more left than he is. And remember, it was either he or Obama was the most liberal person in the Senate before he became vice president. He's not a moderate. And I would like to ask Trump supporters. I don't care about me. But if you are a diehard Trump supporter and you turned out to be right, don't rub the noses of those who will admit that they were wrong. Welcome them. You cannot do what the Bernie Sanders people will do. They don't want anybody. When Bernie Sanders is out, they're not going to be jumping on the Biden bandwagon. And Donald Trump needs every single voice and every single vote he can get. If you rub the when somebody comes up and says, hey, I want to help. Welcome them. Welcome them. You need to get every single vote. You may not like it. You may want to be vomiting afterwards. I can't believe I'm here with this person who is so against whatever. Fine. Swallow it for the good of the country. It has to be a positive movement because that's the one thing that George Will said that is true. People want a return to normalcy. They don't want to be a part of something angry. So don't be angry and you'll win. And you'll win. All right, our sponsor. Sorry, I've lost my sponsors. Oh, here they are. Okay. It's Relief Factor. If you're in pain, Relief Factor can help you. Relief Factor has helped me a great deal. You want to get out of pain and you've tried everything else? I know, I've been there. And you can take a whole buttload of drugs or you can do something that is drug-free and natural and it will reduce the inflammation in your body. Yesterday, I got off the air. I worked till about 5 o'clock Mountain Time and we were lifting railroad ties and trying to build this backstop for a shooting range. There's no way I could have done 20 minutes of that 18 months ago. I'm taking Relief Factor. My pain is usually under control. Nothing else did it. Relief Factor helps. Please get your life back. Do the things that you want to do. ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. 10 seconds, station ID. Stu, I'd like to hear your commentary on my last monologue.
It's a very open-ended
listening.
I don't listen to this show. No, I was listening to a show, just not this one.
Yeah, just not this one.
I mean, is there anything specific you're looking for? What?
Yeah, I'm just wondering how you're feeling about what we're facing in 2020 with even a Biden.
Yeah.
And the people who will stand on the sidelines and say, well, you know what? I don't like Trump, but he's done some great things, but I don't like Trump, blah, 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 blah. I mean, we have a record now.
It's just I think it's such a small number at this point, right? I mean, I think that there's, what's the Trump's approval rating among Republicans? 92%. I mean, sure, there's going to be some people who are, you know, not going to be fans, and
I don't mean Republicans. I mean the people who are going to make a difference are the people who are independents, and I consider myself an independent. I'm not a Republican. I think you're an independent.
Mm-hmm.
We voted Republicans, but we've also voted for libertarians, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
It's those people who just, you know, you don't want to be. You know, get on the Trump train. No, I don't want to be on anybody's train. You know what I mean? And that's not Trump. It would be like if it was Biden or anybody else. I don't want to be on anybody's train. I'm a thinking human being. I don't know how to explain it. Yeah. I just think there are people that still won't look at the things that he's done, will only look at the way he behaves. And that's hard to swallow. But
yeah, I think that's, you know, there's obviously ways to deal with that if you're a president, which is, you know, try to downplay that. But it's one of Trump's strengths, right? Like, this is what he really enjoys doing. I think he likes that fight. So, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. He's simply not going to win people in that bandwagon, right? If you're in the bandwagon of, I don't really care what he does, I just don't like his attitude, you're never going to win him over because Trump's not changing. He's in his
70s. No, But I think that there are those people who are now so deadlocked where they were in 2016. They don't like the behavior or something. Okay, neither do I. But now we have new information. We see which side he's on and what he's fighting for. And I don't agree with everything. Now, there's some pretty big things I don't agree with. But
I think it's a good,
much
it's,
more than the other side.
I think there's an interesting sort of struggle there we can talk about here in a second.
Yes. Is the Glenn Beck program.
All right. CarShield is just this fantastic service. I can't tell you enough. I was hauling a load of wood in the back of one of the ranch trucks. And I don't know anything about how to fix a truck or a car or really anything. I didn't even know how to open the hood. I looked for a while and I couldn't find the latch, and I felt really stupid because I'm in a part of the country where everybody was stopping going, hey, do you need any help? And I'm like, no, because you'll think I'm even a bigger idiot than you already do. Anyway, fixing your car, including the towing, the rental car while yours is in the shop, all of this is covered with CarShield. CarShield.com. If your car has 5,000 to 150,000 miles, it will save you so much money. When it's a covered repair, they take care of it. It's CarShield. They've saved me thousands of dollars. CarShield.com. CarShield.com. Use the promo code Beck. Save 10%. 1-800-CAR-6000 or CarShield.com.
Join us in Texas for the new museum. It's happening in a couple of weeks. Go to mercury1.org. Get your tickets now.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. And we're joined by David Barton. And David, you are very politically active, and you see polls. Tell me what the things that the president needs to stand on to be able to win.
I think there's two issues that he has opportunity to make a lot of ground on. One actually is socialism. Polling we've seen on socialism is very interesting for where it breaks demographically. You have about 41% of Americans who support socialism. You have 69% of millennials and 75% of college students. So the younger the crowd, the more they support socialism. But what's interesting is George Barna. I love Barna because he never really stops with just a question or a poll. He keeps asking questions, find out if you know what you're talking about. So he found that 41% of Americans supported socialism. And so he asked an additional 40-plus questions about socialism. And he just asked what it was. He said, do you support greater government regulations? Do you support greater government ownership of private business, et cetera? And it's all socialism. And he found at the end only 2% actually supported socialism once they knew what it was. They just didn't have a clue. So we found that, you know, surface polling, when you ask people what is socialism, the two biggest answers were that it dealt with social media or that it dealt with sharing. And who's against sharing? Right. So I'm for socialism.
Yeah.
So when you actually get into what it is, and so I think the president has a big opportunity to really gain ground if education about socialism can go as part of what he's doing. If he'll keep talking about it for the next several months and people chime in and say, do you understand what socialism is? Do you understand what the free market, what you lose? I think he has a big ground there. I think the other big ground he has is actually what he raised last night on abortion, how extreme it is. He talked about Virginia, et cetera. We literally have seen that since Virginia, Governor Northam said what he said, since Cuomo did what he did in New York, other states have joined. We've seen that the pro-life position among Democrats has increased 17%, which that's just massive. Among young people, there was a 40-point switch because they didn't really think about what abortion was in late term. Mm-hmm. And so somewhere between 70 and 80% of the nation opposes last trimester abortions, much less infanticide. So that's another issue that if he will stay on that and people talk about what this actually is. And by the way, Cuomo, after he passed that bill in New York, his numbers plummeted to the lowest they've been in his entire term after he did that essentially an infanticide bill in New York. So I think those are two big opportunities he has.
So I just got word that we have coming in for our museum. We have some survivors, the mother of one of the big survivors of the Boko Haram nightmare with Muslims coming in and just taking these kids, you know, and Michelle Obama tweeting, you know, we want our girls back. Well, we got some of them. And we have one of the mothers coming in from Nigeria to talk about that. We have a couple of people that are going to be docents at this museum because it's not our usual museum.
That's right. Yeah, this museum.
Can you explain a little bit? Go ahead.
This really, how do we say this? There's so much we learn about history that is history, but history really is today. I mean, we will look at the African slave trade, 350 years, 12.7 million Africans brought out of Africa into slavery in 350 years. Okay. But today there are 40 million in slavery today. That's more than 350 years of the African slave trade. What are we doing about it today? And so when you
can't really denigrate our founding fathers and say, oh, they didn't do enough when the problem is much worse and we're not even looking at it.
That's right.
David, there's also, we're going to clear up some things, and I think we're going to make a few people mad with some of the stats, but they are official stats. For instance, the two that we keep coming back to, one, the slave trade in America was horrible.
That's
horrible.
Right. That's right.
But out of all those that were enslaved and brought across the ocean, we were only 4% of the receivers.
Yeah, when you,
the number one was Brazil.
Brazil was 46% of all those carried out of Africa went to Brazil. 26% went to Great Britain. 10% went to Jamaica. You keep going down the list. We're one of the smallest on the list, which doesn't excuse what we had. But America, the English colonies in America, 3.3%. Denmark had less than that. So, but we're at the bottom, and that's still way too many. Shouldn't have happened, but there's no excuse. But what we also point out is there has never been any people in history that, number one, did not own slaves, and number two, were not themselves slaves at some time. And so the American academic thing of slavery is absolutely white on black, and it's white privilege, and et cetera. Statistically, that doesn't hold up. I mean, quite frankly, you had in that same period, Muslims captured 1.25 million slaves, and most of them Christian slaves. They were doing religious slavery. We know that at the time of the Civil War in South Carolina, 43% of free blacks in South Carolina owned black slaves. And we know that with the Indian tribes at the time of the Civil War, one out of every eight among the five major Indian tribes, they were black slaves. Indians were big owners of slaves. As a matter of fact, when the 13th Amendment was passed, it didn't apply to the Indian nation, and so the Indian nations had slavery much longer than we had it in the 13th Amendment.
And you never hear any of this. You never hear any of it. And again, we'll only get in trouble for those who think we're trying to excuse it, and we're not.
We're not.
Just trying to give perspective and to show you that history repeats itself, and without a true balanced look at history, you can't do anything. You're just going to be trapped in the past. History is being made right now, today. David, how did it end in Brazil? How come somebody who takes 46%, we only take 4%? Do they struggle with their slave heritage?
Oh, no, they don't cover that in history. But Brazil still is a very high country for a high number of slaves today. One of the things that we have as you come into the museum is a map showing the dispersion of slaves at 12.7 million to all the nations back then. Kind of shows a hot spot, which were the hot nations. Well, there's a map today for the 40 million, and you look at the hot spots, and Brazil is still a hot spot. So it's not like that they have gotten over this. This is still a very current thing all across Africa. They're the same places that were culprits 300 years ago are still culprits today, quite frankly.
It's also interesting, and this is just this. You don't even leave the lobby or the first part of the. I think we have it broken up in 9 sections. We're only covering the stuff that's in section 1.
Yeah, that's
You'll
right.
You'll be in there for like that's 10 right. minutes. I mean, that's this right. is section 1. The fact that, you know, we fought a civil war. We had the 13th Amendment, which will be down in our studios. You'll be able to see the actual document. And I think the Juneteenth document as well, isn't it?
Yeah, Juneteenth is when the announcement reached Texas, which was like a year and a half later that the 13th Amendment was signed. So it was the Emancipation Proclamation. But we actually have the pen that Lincoln used to sign the 13th Amendment right there with the 13th Amendment. So it's really some amazing stuff.
It's really going to be cool.
Once in a lifetime kind of opportunity to see some cool stuff.
Yeah. And we, as we're doing this, you know, we look at, again, our founders and we say, you know, they were horrible. Well, Mexico actually abolished slavery before we did. Do you know the dates, David?
I don't remember the dates. Yeah, technically, on paper, they abolished slavery. It didn't really work out that way because they had a 99-year kind of exception. Oh, by the way, if you own slaves, you can hold them up to 99 more years. But we're abolishing slavery, right. But you get to keep your slaves for 99 right. years.
And
okay,
isn't that pretty much what we get yelled at for with our founders when they made the compromise in the Constitution and said, look, we're going to phase out this part and we'll come back to it later. I mean, at least they didn't say, and 100 years later, then it's going to stop. Well, I mean, they were hoping that it would stop earlier.
Their abolition of the slave trade, that they said in 1787, we want this ended by 1808, that's the earliest of any nation. I mean, abolishing slave trade, 1808, we're first on that. We're kind of second in actually abolishing slavery. We are the only nation in the history of the world where the whites fought whites and ended slavery for blacks. I mean, we've got so many firsts that don't get talked about, but what happened even with the founding fathers and the slave trade, the problem we have with academics today is that there is a northern view of slavery where that, for example, in Massachusetts, there never was a time when blacks could not vote. You have a middle view of slavery in the middle colonies, and you have a southern view, which is where the plantation slavery was, all the abominations. Mm-hmm. And all mm-hmm. we cover is the southern view of slavery. We don't cover the middle colony view or the northern colony view. And so we really do not teach an accurate view of history on what happened with race. And, you know, we're going to hope to do that in the museum. Not hope to. We're doing that in the museum because we want truth. Truth is the objective we have.
Right. And, again, it's not to diminish this. And the whole point of the museum, we haven't even gotten to yet. The whole point of the museum is if you hate it so much, why don't we all work together to stop it from happening today? Mm-hmm. And there's some stunning things that I'm shocked that we have, and I think are this is not for your small kids. This is not for your small kids. But hopefully it will be another drop in the bucket to get people to act. Mercury1.org is where you can get the tickets. David does a tour. I'll do tours. Stu even does a tour, which I don't know what you're going to learn on that.
Very little, but it'll be fun.
It is really something that we have worked very hard, and we have sweat blood over this one because we know how dangerous this is. We know in this politically correct environment to tell the facts that you've never heard, put it into perspective and not dwell on that, but say, look, this is the pattern that happened then. Look at the pattern. It's happening again now. And it doesn't have anything to do with race. Let's work together. That's not a popular thing. But we invite you to come, and you can get your tickets at mercury1.org. It opens up the 27th of June, and it goes through the 7th of July. Make sure you join us, mercury1.org. That's mercury1.org. Get your tickets now. We're 10 days away from the opening. David, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You bet. Let me tell you about American Financing. The Fed has signaled that they're going to drop interest rates again at their meeting. And that's great news if you're looking to buy a house, if you're looking for a consolidation loan, if you have a variable mortgage. So much better to have that variable mortgage go down than up. May I suggest that you lock your variable mortgage in? May I suggest when these rates are coming down like this, that if you want to buy a house, now is the time to do it. And you need to do it with a mortgage company that is not out just to make every buck from you. You need somebody that works for you, that's not getting paid by the banks. AmericanFinancing.net, they are the ones that will make sure that you're not getting yourself in over your head, that you have the right loan, that they're not just jamming you into something because they get a kickback from the bank. It's AmericanFinancing.net. So whether you're buying your next home or your forever home, whether you are consolidating, I strongly recommend you get out of the credit card debt. If you're looking to get into a locked or fixed rate, not a variable mortgage, now is the time. The only people I trust, AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net, or call 800-906-2440. AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
We covered so much ground today. If you missed a second of it, make sure you go back and listen to the podcast. It's available at iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. But you don't want to miss today. Kind of a taking to the woodshed of AOC and her ridiculous, ridiculous comments yesterday that are just so. She is in a prison. She's in a prison of her own building. She is not a stupid person, but she is just locked in self-imposed ignorance.
It's a controversy. There's a big controversy there, Glenn, obviously, that surrounds this, which is a lot of people, I think, with a lot of evidence, say she is a really stupid person. And the fact that you're bringing up the opposite is controversial, I think, to a lot of the audience.
Well, she got into BU. I mean, you're not a moron if you're going to BU.
A lot of people get into good schools. She seems to have retained no information or knowledge from whatever trip she took, supposedly, to BU, which I guess she did, but it's bizarre. I mean, and we were talking about this a little bit yesterday in that, like, what is the reasoning for things like this? Is she the type of person that is intentionally antagonizing because she's trying to stir it up? Or is she just so dumb that she's getting these things wrong? I kind of landed on she believes in her mind that she's being brave, right? Like, she thinks she's saying things that are true, but no one else will say. And she doesn't realize that the reason no one says them is because they're not true. So that's kind of why people go down
that
road.
So she's saying what the things that no one else is thinking.
Right, because and they're not thinking them because they're not accurate. I think that's part of it. I think she is looking for the reaction at some level. I mean, certainly, I think she stumbles herself into scenarios that her own mind didn't predict at the beginning of the sentence. I think that's a fairly common thing. She starts talking and doesn't know where it's going and lands herself in controversy and then retroactively tries to fix it on Twitter. But I mean, part of it, I think, though, is that, you know, she'll read a tweet, she'll read a blog, she'll think it's knowledge, and then she comes out with it. And that's really the limits of the entire process. And when that's your process, you're going to make a lot of, you know, foot in mouth, face to rake type of moments.
Well, I think that she was born in a rake factory.
Yeah.
She had to be just beaten stupid, just in a rake factory. Just, hey, I'm taking my first step. Poof.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to poof. I mean, wow, the knocks to her head have been incredible. But we take her apart intelligently. You can hear that and our review of Trump yesterday and what happened to the rally all on our podcast. The Glenn Beck program.